From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made on a Christmas morning somewhere in the greater Rochester area. The presents are scattered and broken parents fear, and St. Nicholas won't come again for a year. Torn wrapping paper is everywhere, the detritus of Christmas morning, and then a child looks at a parent and says, "Is that it?" It's an uncomfortable moment, and research shows it can have damaging effects. A high level of materialism during childhood may even decrease life satisfaction in adulthood, according to multiple long-range studies. And studies of adults have associated increased materialism with decreased life satisfaction, happiness, vitality, social cooperation, and environmentally sustainable behaviors, as well as increased depression, anxiety, racism, and antisocial behavior. That comes from a 2013 study by Gene Twenge and Tim Kasser that appeared in the journal Pediatrics. So this hour, we're turning to you. We want to know how you approach gift giving. We're looking for new ideas on how to move away from materialism. And by the way, that's not to cast aspersions on any of us. I say us, me included, who have a list of gift buying to do for the holidays and sometimes feel like you're just checking boxes. It has become kind of embedded in our tradition, whether we like it or not. So we have parents in studio. We've got people from different work backgrounds. Kim Meraldo is a mother of two. Thanks for being here, Kim.
Thanks for having me.
Joel Helfrich, a father of one, and also someone who has worked in a number of capacities, I would say, when it relates to, I think, a different approach to education, societal values, and more. He's the director of a school that is yet to launch, so among many other things. Joel, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Is that all that accurate? Good enough?
Well, I've got a lot of animal children.
Animal children as well. Yes, very good. Dr. Elizabeth Murray is a pediatrician at Golisano Children's Hospital and a mom of how many?
Two.
Welcome back to you. Melanie Funches, Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association of Rochester and a mother of?
Four.
Welcome back to you as
Thank
well.
Thank you.
So stress, Melanie, is something that a lot of people feel this time of year, especially as we get closer to a day like Christmas where all of a sudden, it feels like you're in the middle of December, and October and November just flew by, and you've got boxes to check, you know, how many people are on a list. I have to get this because that's the requirement in my family. And what should be, or what we hope would be, a fun kind of upbeat month becomes anxiety. Can you first talk to us from a health perspective about what it can do to us?
Well, I think it can be incredibly anxiety-producing, and for many people, this time of year can be quite depressing because it's all about expectations. And when we set our expectations in objects rather than in relationships, we tie the value of a relationship to an object. A lot of times that creates this expectation. A lot of times it's higher than what we can actually meet. You know, even though you get the biggest, shiniest thing, somehow, even if people are happy, there's sometimes those voices within ourselves that say that it's not good enough. So it sets you up to be anxiety-ridden.
And what happens for the child who might say, but my friends got XYZ, or my friends are getting XYZ?
Are you asking me as a mental health professional, or are you asking me as a mother?
Both.
Well, as a mother, I'm not their mother. They're not my child. Right. And my thing is, when I was raising my kids are all 20 months apart. And so there's a lot. It's a lot. And what we did was we started really early on saying, what does a gift look like? You know, and we did things like gifts of time, because there's four of them and they're 20 months apart. There was a lot of stuff going on. So there was a thing where we would give our kids gifts of time, you know, where we set the expectation that this is not about stuff. You know, you can get things, things are okay to have, but you are not ruled by things. Your value is not set in what you get. You know, the value is set in the value of us being together. And so we set that as a value very early on. As a mental health professional, my thing is we need to make sure people feel affirmed and valued, not for what they can do, but for who they are. And if we attach things, if we attach all the value to objects, we're missing who people are, we're missing what people are for what people can do or what people can give. And that is not, and that's just not cool.
Mm. Dr. Murray, what's your approach to this?
I think first the point about expectations is critical. I've always said, and I will always say, that when parents struggle, it's almost always all about expectations versus reality, that if you feel yourself getting into chaos and things are just not going the way you want, you got to step back and say, wait, what was my expectation? What is the reality? If grandma lives 6 hours away, you cannot have that expectation that the two-year-old is going to sit in the car for 6 hours. That trip is going to take you 10 hours. That has to be your new expectation. That's where we all struggle. When expectations don't meet reality, you have to check your reality. The other thing is get rid of that elf. Elf on the shelf does not need to be in anybody's
yes,
house.
Yes, we were going to do a separate conversation on this, and I know I'm going to take flack for this, but yes, that scares me, that thing.
I am anti-elf. I'm sorry. I like elves in general. I'm excited for that one elf who went off to become a dentist and live his dreams. I think that's great. But the elf on the shelf in your house doesn't need to be there. I think also that an interesting thing we have to think about and talk about, too, is, you know, Hanukkah is not necessarily a holiday that's meant to be about gift giving, but yet here it is. That's what it's become because of Christmas. And there's a lot of other kids out there who have all sorts of expectations for gifts and all sorts of things because of what we've done with the other holidays. So I don't really, we can't just focus on Christmas. It's right. The season.
But you know, and when you said that, it made me think about Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is not about gifts. Kwanzaa is an African American holiday that starts after Christmas and goes through New Year, and each day is based upon a principle of the Nguzo Saba, which is about things like faith, self-determination, cooperative economics, creativity, and purpose. And in those, each day you come together as a family and you talk about how you're manifesting that in your lives. And you break bread together, you pour libation, you do these things, but it's not about stuff. It's about relationships. And I think if we go back, I remember hearing stories of people who grew up and they would get an orange for Christmas. And they were like, it was the sweetest orange. And it wasn't so much, it was the goodness of having fresh fruit, but it was about, you know, that they were scarce and that your parent loved you to get you an orange. And we get stuck. Like, my thing is, granted, my children are now 22, 20, 18, and 16, but what the heck is a Hatchimal? And my thing is, people are going bananas. And I'm like, why? I mean, it's about expectations again, but my thing is, let us go back and look at ourselves and say, what is really important?
Right. Remember that pediatric residents are now taught, along with their supervising colleagues, to teach families about the importance of having dinner together. We are at that point where we are teaching families to remember you need to all sit down to have dinner together. That is an important
without devices.
Without devices. That's a big one.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I reached out to parents in general saying, I want to hear sort of a variety of ideas and experiences with different approaches to gift giving, because maybe our listeners, maybe I will walk away with some different ideas. So I want to read a couple that Joel Helfrich, who's here, did you survey your neighborhood? Is that what you did?
So we've got a Nextdoor group.
The app?
Yeah, it's awful.
It's awful?
But it can also be great. It's one of these things like, you know, depending on the day, you hate it or you love it. So what I did is I reached out last night to 4,444 people, and I basically said, you know, what is your approach to gift giving? How do you view, you know, kind of what happens around the holidays? And, you know, do you do something special? Is there an approach that you have? And just let me know. And, you know, by the time I got here, I think 8 people had replied, which is, you know, a good survey.
And it is. And,
for
and,
me, at least.
And they had interesting things to say, I thought. So I'm, can I read a few?
Yeah, definitely.
So CJ writes, we give each of our adult children a letter detailing a donation made in their name to a charity that reflects their passion or interest. That way they are contributing to their cause, even though they don't have money yet. Christina Felsen says, I make cookies or other edible gifts and make charitable contributions to charities that I know are supported or liked by the individual I'm giving the gift to. It's become a tradition in my family to donate to charity in memory of those that have passed away. And Denise writes, I believe in giving two gifts, the gift of prayer and the gift of presence. Presence, ENCE. I earnestly pray with my family and friends, and I spend quality time with them during the holiday season. That's great stuff. I thought Kim Moraldo's response on Twitter, I asked you to come in because I thought at least this is a different framework of thinking for your kids. Again, how many kids?
We have two.
And how old are they?
They're 11 and 12.
And so what's the thought when it comes to holiday gift giving with them?
So our kids are pretty fortunate. They have lots of people that like to shower them with gifts. And last year, we had a conversation with them about we don't want to be giving them gifts just for the sake of giving them gifts. There are many people who have a lot less than our children. And so the approach that we go with is that we do four focused gifts, which is something that they want, something that they need, something to wear, and something to read. And it becomes a real enjoyment for shopping because the books that we're picking for the kids are thoughtful books. Most likely, my husband's going to read the book with our daughter. My son likes to read individually, but picking something that will pique his interest is a challenge. Deciding whether or not a bathrobe is something that they need or something that they want and doing it. But also for us, it's a matter of sitting down and forcing our children to name things that they want to have was becoming incredibly arduous. And we just didn't want to say, okay, name things for us just so we can go out and buy them for you. And so this approach has just worked for our family.
All right, so I may just steal this year. I love this idea. And I'm already looking at a book by Pete Souza, former White House photographer who wrote a book called Dream Big Dreams, Photographs from Barack Obama's Inspiring and Historic Presidency. And it's got the cutest picture of the president with two kids on the cover. And my son, first president he knew was Barack Obama, so he's not listening. He may get this gift for the book. I love this idea. And what do your kids think of it? What have they told you about it?
So originally, my son was pretty put out by it. He thought, well, I want to have more than just one thing that I want to have. And I said, great. I said, I want you to have the things that you want. And so if you can come up with a list for me of things that you want, then we can talk about it. But he doesn't have a long list of things, and he realizes that he has lots of family members that like to give gifts to him, and so he's also now fully on board with it and likes to know whether or not, if we get him something for his bedroom, that that's something that he wants or if it's something he needs and how it plays into it.
And what about your other child?
Our daughter loves it. She's a really easygoing kid that is just very selfless, and so she is happy with anything at any point in time.
I love this idea. Really cool. Joel, what about you? What are your thoughts? You've got one child, and it can be tough. It can be really tough.
Yeah, so my daughter is the product of divorced parents, and the one parent, not me, has more resources than I do. So, I'm not sure how that plays out, but, my daughter seems to think that she should get some pretty expensive gifts, and they're not going to come from me. What we've done every year is I give somewhere between $25 to $40 worth of presents, usually one or two gifts, but which could include, by the way, going out to dinner or lunch. So my daughter and I will go out to lunch. We go out to lunch all the time. And so that's part of what she'll get as a gift. And we will spend time on a Saturday or Sunday or Friday going out to dinner. And then in addition to that, we'll go to a coffee house and she'll get a hot chocolate and I'll get a tea and we'll, play a game or read or just sit in each other's presence. So I don't know if that's a good part on mine to have her have low expectations for me. I'm not sure, but that's kind of how things play out for us. We also have a lot of animal children and they usually get, a bone and a toy and it usually comes from Santa. And that's the way we roll.
Now you've derailed for me. They don't know that it's Christmas. You know that?
Well, our one dog knows it's Christmas. In fact, he's the best gift opener I've ever seen. We've been meaning to take a photograph of him or a video of him and put it on YouTube. So that's our next project. So
now back to a serious point, and then I want to kind of turn to Melanie for kind of sort of the mental health perspective on this. Because, as you say, in a family with divorce, sometimes there feels like there's competition.
Right.
And what you're putting forward is, you can't compete with that. But can you still enter that holiday season not feeling either pressure to compete or the idea that a child might have expectations? I mean, do you just have overt conversations about that?
We do talk about it. I mean, she gets presents throughout the year and, I'll take as an example, and I I'm not trying to air dirty laundry or anything, but the day after Thanksgiving, she was essentially given the opportunity to go online and purchase things. She's 12. And her mom okayed those purchases, and she, that's that. But we had a conversation about it. You know, there are kids who don't have that opportunity, who couldn't even dream of having the opportunity to basically have a credit card to go and spend on whatever the hell they wanted the day after Thanksgiving. So, you know, we do have these conversations, and she seems to recognize things. You know, she wants some expensive markers for Christmas. And, you know, I might be able to buy a couple of the markers, but I'm not going to buy her, you know, $100 worth of markers. It's just ridiculous. So we do have these conversations. She seems to know, you know, she has a small list of things she wants, but they're rather expensive items. And I think that she knows at this point that, you know, they're not going to come from me. You know, for us, you know, this holiday season and Christmas is not about, you know, what you can give somebody. It's about spending time. It's about being nice. It's about all the great things that come along with this time of the year. Mm-hmm. So,
and Mel, what Joel's describing also is the gift of experience. That he may make sure that with a gift, we're going to spend more time together in each other's presence as opposed to a physical object. And I'm hearing that from listeners as well, that it's the gift of experience instead of stuff. From a mental health perspective, do you see value there?
There's absolute value. And I think what I'd like for us to do is do a reframe of value. Because what I heard in your exchange is that you can't compete with that. So that's saying that one thing has value over a different thing. And I would make the argument that the gift of time, the gift of experience is equally, if not more so valuable, because your daughter, when she's 30, may not remember when she was 12 that whatever thing she got and what she bought on Black Friday, right? But she may remember, Dad, remember when we went to that coffee shop and there was that guy with the purple hair and he went and we did this, this, and this.
Right.
And so my thing is, if we have, as parents, we have a finite period to sow seeds into the souls of our children to make the citizens we want them to be in the world. You know, and are we going to sow those seeds by way of Amazon? Are we going to sow those seeds by... No, I'm being really serious.
No,
I mean, you know how I feel about this.
Definitely.
It's like, you know, do you sow... We want our kids to value certain stuff, right? And we want our kids to value having dinner. So if we're... Are we going to buy them, you know, buy them a car for Grubhub? Or are we going to cook some food and sit down and have a meal? You know, that's so, and we as the adults have to teach them that there is equal value, because everything for our kids is modeling and teaching. We model and teach for our children. If we teach them that the value is in creating relationships and creating experiences and creating relationships, and that those are the things of highest value, that's what our kids will value. Does that make sense?
It certainly does to me. And I want to check in with our listeners. I see the phone starting to ring. If you want to share your stories or your thoughts on maybe alternatives to traditional gift giving, or maybe how you've sort of modified it the way Kim described, or anything you want to share in that regard, we're looking for ideas. I think we can all walk out of here with some good ideas and perspectives. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll free. 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. How about the impact of what advertising does targeting kids here? So one study by Susanna Opry, Monique Buzgen, and Patty Valkenberg that appeared in Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin explored the causal relationship between materialism and life satisfaction in children age 8 to 11 years old. Materialism was described as a preoccupation with possessions and the belief that products provide happiness and success. And the authors found that experiencing low life satisfaction led to higher materialism in children who frequently watch television. This was attributed to television advertising, which often equates owning material possessions with happiness. In particular, the authors noted that advertising may teach unhappy children that material items can help them cope with feelings of low life satisfaction. Dr. Murray, what do you think about that?
So there are these things on YouTube, these videos called these unboxing. And at first when I heard about it, I thought this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. How does this person not only make a bajillion dollars on YouTube, but have millions of followers? And then my now 8-year-old daughter switched from watching TV shows on Disney and stuff that doesn't have commercials to seeing some shows with commercials. And all of a sudden she said, but I saw the commercial and look at all the great things this does. And I said, aha, Yes, let's watch the opening videos and see what you really get in that box. And these things are incredibly helpful. This is a great resource to just to show kids what is it really and have that conversation about how we present ourselves in the world. We want to represent ourselves accurately, but you have to understand that the things we see on TV may seem realistic, but they are not necessarily always accurate representations of how we live and act in the world.
Kim, do you ever think about your kids and the way advertising may target kids? I mean, as a parent, how do you navigate that?
I do think about it. We don't have cable television in our house, and we don't. Our kids don't spend a lot of time just sitting and watching television, so it's very little impact in our house. It's not something that they're exposed to. Because I do, that whole unboxing thing, I have memories of my own childhood of expecting my Barbie dolls to come out of boxes and dance and being very disappointed in their immobility and their unflexibility. And, but no, we don't, our kids aren't exposed to it a lot. So it's not something that is very impactful.
I wonder if this move away from cable TV will start to change that dynamic. And I tend to think that may be a really good thing. Phone's blown up. Let me grab some calls. Barbara first in Brighton. Go ahead, Barbara.
Hi. I'm really enjoying this conversation that you all are having. And I'm going to preface it by saying my children are now middle-aged. And I remember back about 35 years ago, Christmas was like an extravaganza, and they had to have a million presents, and from not only their parents but their extended family. And one Christmas, my oldest son was about 8 years old, and he said, "Mom, we have too much stuff." And that was like a zinger to me. And you know, talking to my children really changed my attitude on what Christmas was about. And, you know, I think every year after that, we scaled down more, and it got to the point where we would get them a few things, and then we would buy presents for children who didn't have presents. And I have to say, we must have done something right, because they are all very nice adults right now, and they're all minimalists and are very, very limited in their gift-giving and in the material goods that they want. Mm. So I'm appreciating what you all are having to say. It's wonderful.
Barbara, real quick, because they've become minimalists as adults, was there a spark that started to move it in that direction that you're aware of?
Well, you all were just talking about, you know, you not watching too much television, and my children still say, "Mom, you only let us watch a half an hour a day." And I said, "Yeah, well, you know, I didn't believe in letting you watch that a lot." And they said, "Well, you know, we go over to our friend's house and watch TV." And I said, "Yeah, I knew that too." But I think that, I think we did some things right. And in fact, two of my kids don't even have TVs right now as adults. And my grandchildren are being raised with having a very minimal number of toys. And if their parents feel they have too many toys, they will give them away to someone else. So, yeah, something worked.
Great stuff. Thank you, Barbara. And, you know, I think for many of us, that's interesting, because if you grow up in a household where there's a lot of gift giving, can that change? Well, there's a family where that changed. But Melanie, do you think television, you know, either mental health or from a parenting perspective, Barbara's associated a lack of TV with a move toward minimalism? These studies look at advertising and TV and kids and the expectations it sets. Is it a good thing that we're moving away a little bit from television?
Well, as a parent, I'm going to answer. I'm presenting in this space as a parent, because this is where I'm feeling this. It's that, yeah, because what the goal of television is a vehicle. Programming is a vehicle for advertisement. And advertisement is meant to make us, to sell us on an idea, to get us to change our behaviors toward an idea. Is it to buy something, to use something, to behave in a certain way, to say a certain standard of beauty, whatever it is. And so what happens is, with us moving away from television, we get to focus more as parents on building relationships and building in the types of learning we want our children to have. Like when Barbara was talking, I was thinking about when my children were young, when my children were young, my husband was very ill. My husband had cancer, and people, unbeknownst to us, would try to adopt us for Christmas, right? And so bags of stuff would show up on our porch, like the 22nd, 23rd of December. These bags of stuff would show up, and we're like, okay. So, I mean, literally for like three Christmases in a row, we had a basement full, because we're like, you know, our kids had a good amount of stuff, but we're like, this is gluttony. God is not pleased, right? Because I'm a preacher's kid. Way too much.
Too much.
It was extra. I mean, it was so extra. And what we would do is we would give away these presents over the course of the year to kids at schools, kids, my kids' friends, whoever. Someone's house got burnt. You know, we'd send a bunch of stuff over, you know, trying to give the stuff away because we didn't want to seem ungrateful to people who wanted to help us. But at the same time, we didn't want to teach our children about gluttony. You know, it was this really weird thing. But moving away from television allows you as a parent, as an adult in the life of a child, to be able to base things, again, on relationship and to sow into your children the things you want them to have that are important, that are not tied to a name brand.
Well, before we get going too much further here, I just want to remind you, we're here because we're talking about different approaches to gift giving around the holiday season and kind of opening it up to our audience to share their thoughts. And in a second, we're going to bring in Jim Allen, a professor at SUNY Geneseo, who wrote a book on happiness, took a look at a lot of different studies on what does make people happy and what doesn't, everything from faith to materialism and more. And we'll talk to Professor Allen in just a second. But before we do that, let me just grab PJ in Rochester, who's been waiting. PJ, what's your approach? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, kind of a little flip on giving gifts. Last year, and this wasn't my original idea, somebody had suggested this to me. We have a great niece, and we normally would spend maybe $50 on a gift for her. But what we did instead was we sent her 10 $5 bills, and the instructions were that she had to give these $5 bills away anonymously. So for some examples, she might put one behind a book in the library or put one behind a box of cereal at the supermarket. And she might add a little note, something like, have a nice day, or somebody loves you. But the whole concept of doing it anonymously added a really nice dimension to it so that she wouldn't be expecting the person to know who it was that gave the gift and to say thank you. So that was an added dimension. And so we thought that was a really nice way of giving a child an experience of how good it feels to give instead of to receive.
Nice stuff, PJ. Thank you for that. And that makes me think of not only Joel Helfrich, who's a guest as a parent, but also a creator of a school that wants to teach in a model that gets us thinking about systems and the impact of people far beyond ourselves. What's the educational model?
So it's based on the principles of humane education. And so you would have human rights and animal ethics and environmental stewardship kind of at the basis of the school, wrapped in with cultural concerns. And it's it's a model that existed from 1866 until the First or Second World War, and we have for the most part done away with in today's educational system. So we're trying to bring it back. It worked, and let's make it work again.
I think of what PJ's talking about, because he is thinking about beyond just sort of something self-absorbed. Even the act of charity can be about me, me, me. Right. You know, how many names of politicians they'll say, well, I'll get you this money if you put my name on a building. You know, we want the credit. And PJ's saying, I want to teach the joy and the good feelings that come when you know you're helping someone, but you're not expecting credit. For some reason, for me, that goes right to the model that you're talking about. Do you see a parallel?
I do. If somebody gives a donation and they're going to take credit for it, you know, I'm not sure what the danger is in that, but I do think that, you know, we need to be thinking about others in a different way. And I think that the caller, you know, expressed that perfectly.
Yeah. So let me also grab Pat and Greece, and then we'll take our only break. We'll come back to your calls, and we'll bring Professor Allen in. Go ahead, Pat.
Hi. Thank you for having my call.
Yep.
I just wanted to say, when I'm a single parent, and when we first started out, we didn't have a whole lot, and we were fortunate to be recipients of the angel trees. So when things got better, one of the gifts my children always had was they got to pick out an angel and go pick out the present, wrap it, and put it away, you know, put it in the box. And then under the tree, we would have a little box with an angel in it to represent what they had given away. And that was always very important to them, and they've continued it with their own children. Mm. And the other idea that we had was giving gifts to your grandparents sometimes can be really tough because they have everything. So they would make coupons and give them to my dad. And then during the course of the year, my dad would give, you know, they had to pick out what the coupon said. And maybe it'd be an hour of cleaning or picking up the leaves or something like that. And my dad would give them back their coupon. And that worked out to be a great gift. Both my father enjoyed it, and he had lots of time with his grandchildren.
Well, thank you, Pat. I couldn't agree more that I can think of, I think of my dad, and I think I'm going to get a gift. I'm going to go out and buy, like, Dad, there's anything you want. He likes sitting and reading books. And that's the only thing he really wants. He wants to work and then read. And anything he wants to read, he has. So it's just, you know, it's, I feel like I'm wasting money on gifts. And Pat, that's a nice idea. Very nice stuff. We're talking about different approaches to gift giving. And after our only break of the hour, we're going to come back with our guests and work in more of your feedback as well. Melanie Funches is Director of Community Engagement for the Mental Health Association of Rochester. Mother of four. Dr. Elizabeth Murray, pediatrician at Golisano Children's Hospital, mother of two. Kim Maraldo is a mom of two. Joel Helfrich, a father of one. Me, father of one. We're talking about the approaches to gift giving that might be a little different, that might be a little bit more in line with the word that Melanie brought up a lot, which is defining your values and making sure your gift giving sort of models on that. So let's take that break. Come right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, we are live from Geneva and WEOS. We'll tell you about the new White Deer Tours at the old Army Depot along Seneca Lake. They used to house thousands of bombs during wartime, supplied the bombs for Operation Desert Storm and more, and now it's a tour site. Then second hour, the true stories behind the makings of Monopoly the board game and the night before Christmas. Talk to you Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Jim Allen is a professor of psychology at SUNY Geneseo. And I would say, Jim, you wrote the book on happiness. I mean, that's simplifying it a little. Remind our listeners what the book is.
Well, thanks, Evan. The book is The Psychology of Happiness in the Modern World, a Social Psychological Perspective. And it's meant primarily as a textbook, but I also think that people are interested in the area. I try to write it in a very accessible way that they may be interested in it. And I try to take a structural approach, not looking at economic factors, for instance, and how that might affect happiness.
All right, so Jim, you can be the adjudicator. Should we be giving gifts on Christmas?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think that gifts on Christmas is a great idea, but what's important is the message that goes along with the gifts. Some jargon here is self-determination theory, is a motivational theory about how what really makes people happy. And there are three basic motives or needs that people have. A sense of autonomy, feeling like we're our own person, a sense of competence, and then also a sense of relatedness. So I think the message behind the gifts we get at Christmas is really important. If we're giving gifts that are meant to impress other people, meant to increase status, or that somehow take away our own sense of personal control. So, for instance, a toy that has a big corporate tie-in, and the child is kind of dependent on the corporate advertiser to tell the child how to use the toy and so forth. Those kind of things are not good ideas. On the other hand, gifts that truly do communicate love and also help build the sense of competence, relatedness, and autonomy can be really, you know, can be a good idea. It's divorcing those gifts from materialism.
And Jim, I thought a lot as a parent of an almost 6-year-old about when to have conversations about what materialism is, giving to others. So basically, we just started doing that when he was could talk, you know, from the very beginning, knowing that some of it would start to sound like regurgitation to him if he were to say it back to me, which he does now, by the way. And but now he's old enough where I can ask him, do you mean that? Tell me more about this. But but let me ask you from a psychological perspective, when is old enough to really start having conversations about the dangers of materialism?
You know, I'm not a developmental psychologist, so it's hard for me to speak with a lot of authority about child development. But I think that you could begin having that conversation at any age if you pitch it at the child's cognitive abilities. Younger children are not going to understand the theory behind all of this, but you can still tell them that gifts don't mean love, that gifts don't substitute for love, and get more sophisticated as you go through. I don't know. Is that an answer to your question?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, and you know, gifts don't mean love. I mean, a study published in the Journal of Consumer Research in 2015 highlighted three parenting strategies that can lead to greater materialism. And those strategies include these three things. Number one, rewarding children with gifts when they have accomplished something, such as getting good grades. Number two, giving gifts as a way to show affection.
Yes.
And number three, punishing children by taking away their possessions, such as a favorite toy or video game. So that's what that study showed, and I know you've done a lot of research on it. That lines up with a lot of what you've read, Jim?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, those are certainly things to avoid. And, you know, I would just add gifts that are meant to promote status. So, you know, if you have this gift, that means that you're a better person in some way. Or if you have this material object, that somehow it makes you a better person. And I think communicating that to kids is you know, how that thinking is erroneous and how it can lead to less happiness is a really important thing to do. I'd also like to make some comments about advertising and gift giving that you've had a great conversation, and I've enjoyed listening to it. Do you have time for a couple things?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, the psychologists, and I'm a psychologist, have aided and abetted the advertising industry. People that have studied child development very, very carefully and looked at what children need at various stages of development have worked with paid advertisers to try to tailor the advertising programs specifically to child's needs. So for instance, a fairly famous example is the Lunchables processed meat lunch that kids can take to preschool or kindergarten. And it is designed in the way it is to help kids meet this need for competency and autonomy and so forth. But what happens is that instead of kids getting that genuine feeling, they get it only when they buy this product. The advertisers tell them that you can feel competent when you buy this product. So I think psychologists have a lot to answer for advertising and some of the damage that advertising has done. And on a structural level, I think as citizens, parents, one of the things that we ought to do is to make our concern about advertisement very well known and try to do something about the larger consumer culture and the advertising culture. And one last comment is people are talking about giving gifts and happiness. And we'd like to say that there's a lot of research that shows that one way that you can use money to produce happiness is to try to spend money on other people's happiness. And whether you get credit for it or not is not really the issue. It's that whether you're doing it genuinely to try to increase somebody else's well-being or happiness. Mm.
Good stuff. Jim, thanks again. Tell us one more time what the book is.
Oh, thank you. It's The Psychology of Happiness in the Modern World, a Social Psychological Approach, and it's published by Springer. Thank you very much, Evan.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. That's the kind of book that if you keep on your shelf once in a while, you come back to it and you say, this makes sense to me, or I remember reading about that, and it's a good reference book. It's really accessible. We appreciate his time. I want to get a couple of listener comments and kick around to our panel. Steve writes to the program and says, a long email, but essentially Steve is saying, there's been a lot of talk about how giving makes us feel good, but we don't want to sort of create this culture of kids wanting to get a lot. But Steve says, as a grandparent, I love giving a lot, and I don't want to be taken away the opportunity to give a lot around the holidays. So, Melanie Funches, let's start with you. For someone like Steve who says, I just want to give now, and you're going to take that away from me? I want to shower the grandkids with gifts.
And so you can shower your grandkids with gifts. What we're saying is, what are you showering them with? This is about the details. So, you know, Grandpa, shower your kids with, let's say, get them a pack of books, right? And then you come over one night each week, if you live close, and read the book. That is awesomeness. You know, because you're giving time and you're showing the value of literacy and that reading is important and that, you know, that there's a connection with reading and that you're, and then when you read and you tell stories, you can share time and you can split and give intergenerational knowledge to your grandkids. And that is amazing, you know, and your kid and your grandkids will remember it. Remember when Grandpa used to come on Thursdays? Like, my grandfather used to come over when I was really young on Wednesdays and bring Nutter Butter cookies. Yeah, and it was the thing, because he had, you know, this brown paper bag, and we would read and we would play chess. And so, do I remember all the things he got me? No. But do I remember him coming over? Do I remember us playing chess? Do I remember him reading to me? And do I remember the Nutter Butter cookies? Yes. So it's, I mean, but the thing is that we're not trying to take anything away from anybody. What we're asking is that your act of giving and love should be about you and the connection that you're continuing to make with your grandchild, not about the stuff.
So Kim, as a mom who set rules for what your two kids are going to get from you as a parent, you also said earlier that they tend to get showered by other people. Do you have conversations with other relatives about that?
The conversations that we have are really that our kids don't want a lot of things, but it's difficult. We're a blended family, so our kids have four sets of grandparents that all are interested in giving them lots of gifts. And we don't want to deny them that opportunity, but it's incredibly difficult to make a child name things that they want for the sake of receiving a gift. Mm-hmm. So we talk to them a lot about that, because our parents and their grandparents tend to be almost insulted if we don't have a list of gifts for them. And so we just really try to not focus on the gift itself and the things that they can be doing. And again, the opportunities to spend the time with the kids. Some of their grandparents like to do money towards college accounts, which is obviously the best gift that they could possibly give them as an investment in their future. And we like that gift a lot. But just trying to come up with an item for them to buy is very, very difficult.
Yeah, creating that list, Dr. Murray, what do you think?
Well, and I think an important question to ask would be, fast forward 2 weeks and that gift is sitting on the corner of a shelf, ignored. Mm-hmm. As you, as the gift giver, are you going to be angry that they're not still playing with it? Or are you going to say, well, it was fun to watch them open it, and that's enough for me? So, because again, I think that'll go to your motivation of why you're doing that. I agree. My daughter is the first grandchild on my side of the family, and life is good to be her. And that's great. And that's great, because I think there's a balance to it. So, you know, you have to ask yourself of why you're wanting to do that. I think it is a ton of fun to give kids gifts, and they're happy. But as long as you understand, if there's way too much stuff and some of that stuff gets ignored, you can't expect a child to play with everything all the time.
You know,
are you okay with that?
You brought up something interesting, which is, you know, do you want to just watch them open something? Had a conversation recently with a friend who's thinking, well, this is a gift for, you know, a mom and three kids. Maybe like a gift card to a place where, you know, you can do a lot of fun stuff together. You know, so that is an experience for them, but it's not a thing for the kid to open, so that they may get more of that short-term burst on a holiday, on Hanukkah, on Christmas, on whatever day, to open it. But then it's kind of sitting on the shelf, as you said, as opposed to, well, maybe that there's not a rush that comes from a gift card, but they're actually going to have an experience to remember, mm-hmm. and then it becomes, what are you going for?
Right. I mean, I'm seriously considering just wrapping up empty boxes for my 15-month-old, because I think she's just going to think it's really fun to open the boxes and not have a concept of it.
Absolutely.
And that'll be fine.
She will think it's fun. Yeah. The boxes are the best part.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Joel, what do you think?
I agree with everything that's been said.
That was easy.
but you know, going back, Evan, to what you said about the experience, I've done that. Like, I remember a few years ago, a friend of mine, they wanted to go see the Christmas Carol. And the big gift for them was creating an opportunity because they couldn't afford three tickets, you know, and it was a thing. And they were able to go and get the tickets and have a little, you know, their daughter was able to dress up. And it was a huge experience for them. And, you know, sometimes as a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle, think about, like, for us, there's six of us in our family. And there were times when for us to go to a movie was an undertaking because there were six of us. And, you know, and think about the movie and a popcorn and a soda. It's like ridiculous. And so, you know, that would be an incredible gift to say, you know, a night at the movies. You know, because you get to both things. You get to give the big ticket item, quote unquote, mm-hmm. but you also get to create an experience. So it could be the best of both worlds for like grandma, grandpa, aunties, uncles. That could be a great gift.
Well, let me grab one more phone call. This is Samantha in Rochester. Go ahead, Samantha.
Hi. How are you, Evan?
Good. Go ahead.
So I just wanted to touch on a couple things. I'll make it real as quick as I can. So I have a 3-year-old boy. His father and I recently split, and my son and I moved in with my grandparents. I'm not very financially well-to-do, and one of the big differences in his environment is that he went from watching WXXI and PBS commercials to watching Nickelodeon commercials and Nicktoons commercials, and all of a sudden I'm hearing, "Mommy, I want this. Mommy, I want this. This is so cool, Mom," you know? And after about 2 months of hearing this, I saw one of the toys that he wanted. It was only about, you know, $3. I picked up a couple. And when I presented them to him, he was just, like, so happy. You know, I want to make my son feel like this all the time. And living with my grandparents, they think that it's their job to give him everything that he wants, and they say, because he deserves it, because that's our job, you know, and I'm living with this every day, and so it's been really hard to sort of strike that balance, especially now that Christmas is coming, and it's actually, tomorrow I don't have to go to school or to work, so him and I have been talking about it, and we're going to go to those little angel trees, mm-hmm. We have one at our local Walmart, and I'm going to read him a couple of the, you know, this is a boy, he's 9 and he wants this, or this is a girl and she wants this, and he's going to pick one, and he wants to go give a gift to somebody who doesn't get as much, because I've been trying to reinforce to him that, look, you have a lot, mm-hmm. and, you know, not everybody has this much. So I think that's going to be a tradition of ours, is to me and my son to go buy a gift from off the angel trees. I think that's going to be a great tradition.
Well, Samantha, thank you, and good luck to you. I appreciate the phone call, and I want to turn to Joel as somebody who raised the issue earlier this hour of, you know, parents who are divorced and trying to figure out, you know, what you can do and how you find balance this time of year. What does balance, I guess, mean to you, Joel? Because Samantha's raising the issue of what balance might look like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a really good answer. All you can do is, you know, be honest with your child you know, I tend to think that your son is going to figure out that, you know, this is how things are, and your child isn't going to be happy by constantly giving them gifts. So I don't know how to answer the question, but it seems to me that there really isn't a balance. You have to take a side, and that's an unbalanced approach. And so, I don't think even if you had the money, even if I had the financial wherewithal to answer everything that my child wanted, I don't think I would be out there buying those things.
That is the thing that was sort of unsaid earlier, but I'm glad you raised that, Joel, because when you said earlier, you know, I can't afford these expensive markers that she wants or different gifts, and she has another parent who can, would you do that if your means were different?
No. If I had $1 million, if I won the lottery right now, and my partner, I talked about this all the time, she and I would be giving to all kinds of organizations and helping people out in the best way that we could. We wouldn't be buying gifts for people. I'm not saying that we wouldn't buy some, you know, items for different people that need them in our family, but we would also be looking at helping animals, helping people who are homeless, helping children who are in need. And so, you know, even if I had the money to satisfy my daughter's needs, or her wants, rather, I wouldn't be able to bring myself to purchase those items. So,
Well, and let's get, we're down to our last minute. I wish we could take even more of your calls, James in Newark and so many others offering their thoughts on holiday gift giving. But I'm going to turn to Melanie Funches to kind of send us off with some nice ideas as we think about the holidays and think about gift giving and what it truly means here. Go ahead.
You know, on these holidays, it's about us being thankful. You know, if you celebrate Christmas, it's about the birth of Jesus. If you celebrate Hanukkah, it's about thankful for the lamp, the light staying lit. And if we are thankful for the things which we have, I know we said, well, we did that on Thanksgiving. But if we are really thankful for our relationships, and are we, and for us being able to be blessed to be with one another and have people who are with us, and if you let that guide your gift giving, you know, I'm thankful that, you know, you're a pediatrician, and I'm thankful that you take care of the babies. So, you know, have that guide a gift.
I love that idea. So much, so many great thoughts to take with us here from all of our guests. Kim Maroldo, I'm stealing the idea, especially on a book or something to read, something that's neat. I love that idea. And thank you for coming in and sharing your thoughts.
Thanks so much for having me.
Happy holidays to all of you. Joel Helfrich, thank you.
Thank you.
Not only to you, but also your animal children as well.
And they're not gifts, by the way. No animals as gifts this season, folks.
Oh, animals are not gifts. I see what you're saying. Animals are not gifts. Thank you. They're family members. That's right.
That's right.
Dr. Murray, thank you very much. Always good to see you.
Thank you.
Melanie Funches, happy holidays. Thank you very much.
Happy holidays to you, too.
All right, Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. And we are back with you. One of our hours tomorrow takes a look at how Santa became Santa. That kind of ties in. That's all tomorrow on Connections.